This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Has there ever been a better time to be a black blogger? First of all, this election around, your grandma might actually know what your blog is and where to sign up for your RSS feed. Second, well, there's nothing like a presidential race that includes a black man, a white woman, a Mormon, a Catholic, and an evangelical Christian to give you fodder for your opinion pieces. Today, we'll dig into Barack Obama's win in Iowa and what could happen in New Hampshire tomorrow, plus lots, lots more. On deck, we've got Rob Redding, publisher of the ReddingNewsReview.com, Ed Brown, who writes the blog Dark Star Spouts Off, and Jay Smooth, who video blogs at IllDoctrine.com. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello, Farai.
So this is quite a year. Jay, start us out. Has anything changed since Obama won in Iowa?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, certainly this campaign as a whole is forcing all Americans to ask themselves the question, are we ready, in a more concrete way than we ever have before? And certainly Iowa, a lily-white state going for Obama, could give us hope that Americans might be ready to answer yes to that question. But I'm worried about us having too much irrational exuberance on that, because in an Iowa caucus, we're still speaking in theoretical terms. And I wonder if Obama, or Hillary for that matter, became the nominee. I think at that point, that'll be the true test of America's stamina for keeping up this tolerance. And I think it's still possible that we'll see what they call the Bradley effect or the Wilder effect, that some of those votes might drop off towards the end. But it's difficult to say. I mean, a lot of people say Obama is perceived differently than previous black candidates because of his background and so on. So, I mean, I'm fascinated to see how it will play out.
Ed, there was a piece in the Associated Press ran over the weekend that said that voters are colorblind, basically. Do you agree with that?
I'd have to say no. There have been races like in the Baltimore area where, like for Martin O'Malley, when he ran for governor, 95% of the white voters voted for him, and it turned out that only 30% of the black voters voted for him, and the other 70% were dispersed over the other candidates. So maybe while black people are more likely to say, hey, I'm going to vote for this person because he's black, and now evidently I'm not going to vote for this person just because he is black, I think white voters are more, you know, secretive about their plans, and they do what they do, you know, once the curtain string is pulled.
Rob, what do you think?
Well, I think that not much has changed about race in America. Coming from the South, from Atlanta, it's really important to remember that the KKK still exists and that their skinheads still exist and that people are racist in less overt ways. So I think that when he gets South, it will be interesting. South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Louisiana, those will be tough places for him to win. I mean, we're talking about the North here. We're talking about Iowa. I actually spent 4 weeks in Iowa, and actually the Iowans, they're some of the nicest people you ever want to meet, really. And I was actually taken a little bit off guard by it because I expected it to be a little bit more, especially since they have such a low black population, a little bit more uncomfortable. But I felt very comfortable in Iowa. So I don't think that is the litmus test for the rest of the nation at this point.
Do you think that there is a situation, and I'll start with you, Rob, but I want to get everyone's opinion, where there are some African-American voters who are saying, you know what, I don't know if this man can pull it off, even if I support him on a policy level, even if I support the idea of there being America's first black president, I just don't trust that this can happen. Is there kind of a group of African Americans who just can't believe that he's still doing well?
Yes, there is. There's a group out there that supports Hillary Clinton. As a matter of fact, that group is a little bit, I think, kind of dumbfounded as to how she's sunk in the polls so quickly. And I think, and one of the things I talk about in the podcast that I recorded on the website and I want to share with you, is that I think that Karl Rove and some of the Republicans have a hand here in making sure Hillary Clinton looks real bad in the early going to make sure she does kind of drop out. I mean, we see that in the conservative media already. So I think that there is a plan, a concerted effort here to make Obama the candidate, although he beats their candidates head to head in every single poll. I think they have something on Barack Obama.
Ed, what about that? I mean, do you think that at this point that, I mean, there's always operatives from both parties that are closely watching the race. Do you think that there's a possibility that Republican operatives or on the other side, Democrats, could actually be putting their hands in the party primaries thus far?
Thus far, I'd have to say no. It's a nice conspiracy theory, but I can't get into that one right now because there are so many races coming along down the line, and anybody who think that they know Hillary Clinton should know that she's a fighter, and she's going to take it down to the wire. And I think what should be watched by a lot of Black Democrats. I'm an independent, by the way. Well, actually, I just became a Republican just to vote against Giuliani in the primary, but. I think what Black Democrats need to watch is how the Democrat Party responds. I mean, frankly, I don't think that the Democrat Party is really as friendly to Blacks as a lot of Blacks think. So when Hillary gets down, as she is now, as she gets down after Tuesday, you know, watch what comes out of the Democrat Party and watch what comes out of the mainstream newspapers. They are really going to light Obama up.
Jay, do you think that there are a lot more voters like Ed who are dissatisfied with both parties, and where are those voters going?
Well, certainly we saw in Iowa a lot of new voters came into the process, apparently inspired by the new voices and diversity we have in the race. But I think that's hopefully what will offset people who might not be ready, quote unquote, is bringing in new energy from people who didn't feel like there was a reason to be part of the process. And I think it's a tough road to hoe because I think, people like Obama especially seems to have the swagger of a radical but the policies of a moderate in a lot of ways. So I think it might be a challenge to reach those people who have been disillusioned by the process, but I think it's still possible to do it.
Well, folks, I want to reintroduce what we're doing and who we're doing it with. You are listening to NPR's News and Notes. I am Farai Chidea. We have a bloggers roundtable, and with us, we were just hearing from Jay Smooth, who video blogs at illdoctrine.com. We've also got Ed Brown, who writes the blog Dark Star Spouts Off, and Rob Redding, publisher of the readingnewsreview.com. Let's move on to talk about something that's going on in Black radio or in radio, period, with an African-American focus. The urban broadcaster Radio 1 is ending its relationship with XM's Channel 169, The Power, as of tomorrow. At least that's what the Reading New Review is reporting. All of XM's weekend shows and all of its weekday programming after 4 o'clock aren't going to come from Radio 1 anymore. They've had Al Sharpton, Joe Madison, other stars remain on XM. Rob, what is going on in your mind here? What's the question here of distribution and content?
Well, this is an issue where I think the Black listeners out there to talk radio, and there are very few Black listeners to talk radio, but they're very loyal listeners to talk radio. But it's growing by the day here in terms of the listeners. But I think that they will be served well by this change, the fact that you have XM taking over this channel. They'll definitely put a program director in place that's full-time. That's something Radio 1 hadn't done, right? In addition to that, they'll bring in more talent. They'll pay that talent a considerable sum of money to hopefully provide programming. So this will also help in their attempt to capture this whole merger deal from the FCC. So this is going to be important for that.
So you are on Joe Madison's show quite a bit, and so you are staying on XM. I want to move on to Ed. Ed, do you think that this is a question, you know, Radio 1 has been this stalwart mega broadcasting empire among African Americans. Do you think that this deal-making and deal-breaking shows that powers like Radio 1 are really trying to figure out how to reach African Americans in the new millennium? Is this shakeup a good thing, a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing because they tried and they failed, and hopefully they learned some lessons from it. But I think the bigger issue is, to me, still is, will satellite radio really succeed or not? It may contract further to only one player, but then, you know, I'm in, you know, the Baltimore-Washington corridor, so, you know, I don't necessarily have to listen to XM radio or satellite radio because I have so many choices, and that includes talk radio. It was a nice try, and maybe they need to, you know, after they get their financial house in order, you know, figure it all out and try it again. but, you know, this time really put some real money behind it. They're doing a great job with TV One. I just feel that with the radio, the XM radio, they just didn't, you know, go at it as strongly.
Jay, what about the broader picture for media that targets African Americans? You have a kind of this chiasmus effect where you have certain institutional names in black media. I'm thinking particularly a lot of the African American newspapers that are losing audience over time, losing a black audience to mainstream or white-run institutions. Then you have some places that had been identified as black properties, whether they're black-owned or not, like BET, that have huge white audiences. What do people want in terms of media that addresses specific racial communities? Is there, can you even draw any lessons about what people are gravitating towards?
Well, it's hard to tell because especially in radio, I think radio's role in our life has been shrinking across the board due mostly to the revolution in new technology and internet and digital media. I mean, especially in music radio, the two things that radio provided was it used to provide expertise. You went to your favorite DJ because you knew he would take you on a musical journey nobody could. Then more recently, you go to radio for convenience. You turn on the commercial music station and you know it's going to play the same 10 hits every 2 hours. And as far as convenience, you can't beat the internet when it comes to convenience. And as far as expertise, whatever topic or music you want to explore, there's 1,000 blogs and message boards you can go to for that now. And you can build your own radio station on your iPod, download news and notes, download the new Nas album, and program it however you want. So I think it's going to be a challenge, no matter what your niche is, to remain relevant in radio right now. It might be a little bit easier in talk.
It sounds a little bit like what you're saying is that radio content is still going to exist, but it's not going to necessarily be something everyone gets on a radio.
I think that's quite possible. I mean, I think satellite radio was hoping that the convenience of having their software and their hardware pre-installed in automobiles would provide a more convenient way to listen to music than through internet and digital means. But I think, you know, I think it remains to be seen. I think the trick may be providing radio online and in other forms other than on terrestrial radio frequencies.
I want to jump into one last topic. Every few months we hear about a notable discrimination case. Now the nation's largest defense contractor has made the largest settlement ever to one person. It's Lockheed Martin. It agreed to a racial harassment settlement of $2.5 million. The money went to one man, Charles Daniels, African American. Now, the question in my mind is really, every time you have one of these big settlements, obviously it's good, it's vindication for the person who gets the money. But does it change the game? Rob, does it change the game when a corporation has to ante up? Does it mean that that corporation eliminates bias in the workplace? And more importantly, does it mean that corporations in general get a message like, this is not acceptable, this is our bottom line, we're going to have to change our policies?
No, it doesn't change the game. It's good that he received or is receiving this sum of money, and we report on this day in and day out, these types of instances of racism, these types of settlements. I think that it results in folks losing their jobs, them seeing job cuts and restrictions at jobs on spending, et cetera. I think, though, that this is necessary. This is something that we have to see within the private sector. The private sector has to be responsible for the way it treats blacks and all minorities in general. If I can real quickly come back and with the Radio 1 article, one last piece on that is that I don't think Radio 1 had an opportunity really or did what they should have done with 169. I think that at the end of the day, with Radio 1, what they had to have done in the case of XM 169 is they had to create a different product. And unfortunately, Radio 1 has been a terrestrial-based company. So I don't think they ever had an intent of actually making it a success, so I'm glad to see XM taking it over.
All right. Well, I'm going to move back to this discrimination topic. Ed, what about changing the game? If settlements don't change the game, what would?
Honestly, I don't think the only thing that can change the game is, you know, the change in people's hearts over the long term. I've seen it. I've seen the lawsuits change the game temporarily, you know, but then after a while, you know, when people forget, I've seen things where they can go back to where it was before until something else happens. And to me, that's okay. You know, that's life.
In your own experience, if you have ever been faced with something that you view as racially inappropriate, and I think most people have, certainly most black people, what do you do about it? Do you just suck it up? Do you write a note? Even if you haven't faced that, what would be your gut about what to do in a situation?
What I did in the past was, you know, I brought it to that person's attention and my immediate management and, you know, let them handle it. You know, I just said, hey, this is what happened. I don't appreciate it. Went to my manager. This is what happened. I don't appreciate it. This is why, you know, and now do something. But then after that, you know, it didn't happen again. So, yeah, I left it alone. I think it depends on the type of level of harassment, you know, that I'm going through, is whether or not I would say, you know what, forget it, I'm out of here, or you know what, I have to make this company pay, so let's go the EEOC route or the lawsuit route.
Jay, have you ever had to make a choice about whether to bring something up or not?
Well, I'm in kind of a unique position because my parents are mixed, my father is black, my mother's white, and I self-identify as black, but people perceive me as being various things at various times, so it hasn't happened that much in the workplace, but I often get a window into what people are thinking when their guard is down as far as racial issues. And when later on in another conversation they discover that I'm black, you can see their face go blank as they mull over every conversation we ever had previously to remember if they said something they shouldn't have said. But I've been fortunate never to have to confront that in the workplace. But I think it is important for people to take the risk of stepping up and documenting and complaining. And, you know, you have to have the stamina to keep pushing through, because if you look at the details of this Lockheed Martin case, management knew about it for a long time and failed to act over a period of months and maybe years. And, it's just, if you need proof that the Iowa caucus doesn't mean we've made it to the promised land, look at the details of the Lockheed Martin case, and you'll see we've still got a long way to go. So I think we need to have the courage to keep fighting on those things.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thanks so much.
Thank you,
Farah.
Jay Smooth video blogs at illdoctrine.com. He joined us from NPR's New York Bureau. Rob Redding publishes the Redding News Review, an online news site. He joined us from Doppler Studios in Atlanta. And Ed Brown blogs at Dark Star Spouts Off. He joined us from Columbia, Maryland.